Welcome. Are you ready to take a journey with me into knowledge, enlightenment, and discovery? Then let's journey again together. This is your host, Rebecca Jernigan, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Good afternoon. I am Rebecca, your tour guide into a journey of discovery. My wonderful guest today is Dr. Daniel Benor, a holistic psychiatric psychotherapist. A special note, though, about Dr. Benor, this Saturday, he's April 22nd, from 11 to 1, he will be at the Aquarius Bookstore in Kansas City for an experiential introduction to WHEE, and a book signing. So if you're in the area, I urge you to go and visit with Dr. Benor. Now, to find out more about his Kansas City event, you can call his phone number, which is toll-free, 877-432-5777. 877-432-5777. Okay. Just a little reminder here now to visit my website. That's journeyswithrebecca.com. Lots of great resources there, of course, and some really good stuff. I've just posted some pictures from our family Easter party. You know, my grandchild had so much fun searching out those eggs. You got to check it out. Again, that's journeyswithrebecca.com. And lest I forget, our thanks to our sponsor, Fate Magazine. We love you guys. Please visit their website at fatemag.com. Okay, a little more about today's guest. That's Daniel Benor, MD. He is a holistic with an WH is how he spells it, holistic psychiatric psychotherapist, who includes body-mind approaches, spiritual awareness, and healing in his practice. He lectures and leads experiential workshops on stress management, self-healing, spiritual awareness, and just healing. You know, Dr. Benor is the author of Healing Research, Volumes 1 through 4, and he's written many articles on holistic spiritual healing. He appears internationally on radio and TV. He's also the founding diplomat of the American Board of Holistic Medicine, coordinator for the Council for Healing, which is a non-for-profit organization that promotes awareness of spiritual healing, and has served for many years on the advisory board of the journals Alternative Therapies and Health and more. Oh, please don't miss a thing. We'll be right back with more of Dr. Benor and Journeys with Rebecca in just a moment.
Schedule your private psychic reading with Rebecca, a truly gifted intuitive and clairvoyant, and the host of Journeys with Rebecca radio show. Call 1-888-958-2768. That's 1-888-958-2768. Where will your life's journey take you?
Email Rebecca with your comments to mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca. And as promised, we have a very special guest tonight. His name is Dr. Benor. The book that we're going to be talking about, as well as some other things tonight, is How Can I Heal What Hurts? And I'm going to give you his web address, but don't be concerned if you can't get it right now, because we're going to be giving it to you later. But it's holistichealingresearch.com, and under holistic, it's spelled with a W. And right now, I'd like to take the opportunity to welcome Dr. Benor to the show. Welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure, Rebecca.
Oh, this is going to be great. You know, one of the things is how I can heal what hurts is going to be a great subject, but I really want to know what that W stands for. I've never seen holistic spelled with a W.
Over the years, having trained in psychology and medicine and psychiatry and research, I've looked for as many different ways as I can to help people. I feel that the W belongs there because I work with the whole person. Body, emotions, mind, relationships with other people, and with relationships with the environment, and spirit. Many people use holistic these days sort of as a buzzword, where maybe they're doing a little meditation or relaxation or some acupuncture. But I want to indicate that I'm really helping people on all levels of their being.
Well, that makes total sense then to put it in as a holistic healingresearch.com. That makes total sense. And so, all right, so let's talk a little bit about that. You know, I wasn't aware. Are You're a doctor. Are you a doctor of psychiatry, or?
I only admit that amongst friends.
Well,
because today psychiatry is not what it was when I trained.
Well, you know, I've actually had another psychiatrist on a few years back, and he said, you know, he said the same thing. He's been in psychiatry for many, many years. As a matter of fact, he wrote a book that said, warning, psychiatry can be dangerous to your mental health. Kind of an interesting title for a psychiatrist to write.
But not surprising these days.
No, truly it's not.
But when I trained, I had 3 years of intensive supervision and experience in psychotherapy. That involved group therapy and family therapy, medications, yes, but not exclusively. Today, many psychiatrists are in programs where psychotherapy is an elective, and a number of them elect not to bother with it. So they're focused mostly on medications.
Are you saying that when somebody's going through school now to become a doctor in psychiatry, that process is more of an elective and it's not really something that's taught? Is that what you're saying?
It's offered, but people don't have to study it if they just want to focus on giving medications and on treating the body.
You're kidding.
I wish I were.
Are you serious?
Well,
oh my goodness.
So that's a big piece of why I use that W.
Oh my goodness, that is so sad.
It really is. And in my book, I spend a whole chapter looking at the different ways that we can get ourselves in trouble and different ways that we can get ourselves out of trouble through counseling, through understanding ourselves, through understanding each other, where the average psychiatrist today who's just out of training looks at a person as a bag of chemicals that he has to adjust with medications.
Well, you know, unfortunately, that doesn't surprise me because we got a pill for everything, and we got many pills for many things, and it's actually a pretty sad state of affairs because, unfortunately, what motivates, in particular, our country is the drug companies. They kind of hold a licensure over most of our country, which is, you know, we're not going to get down that street, but I mean it's just a fact. And it's terribly sad. And, you know, I'm going to go off on a little tangent here for just a minute because I'm sure you can relate to this. I was just reading an article, I think it was like 3 or 4 days ago, about this very same thing, about this. There was a gentleman, and I just happened to be surfing the web. For some reason, I popped onto this website, and it was this guy that had written an article in a newspaper that was talking about holistic health, you know, healing the self through, you know, herbs and vitamins and natural foods and so forth, naturopathy or homeopathy or whatever. And, of course, he debunked it all, you know, and, of course, he gave the worst-case scenarios where people were trying to take care of themselves, and obviously they didn't do a very good job. So he took, you know, these half a dozen cases of people not doing a very good job taking care of themselves and just really blew it all out of proportion. You know, it was terribly much a fear factor, you know, a thing to frighten people that, oh, you have to go to the doctor because we don't have the knowledge to take care of ourselves. And
well,
I thought that was really, I was just absolutely so irritated over that. And I thought, you know what, we could say the same thing about traditional medicines, what we consider traditional medicines. You know, there's doctors that overdose patients every day or mix medicines up, and a patient actually becomes worse than what they did before they were taking the medications.
Rebecca, it's actually much more frightening than that. There are recent statistics to show that 100,000 people or more die every year in the United States from medications that are properly prescribed. And there are another 150,000 who die because there was an error of some sort. So conventional medicine really doesn't have a leg to stand on when it compares itself to complementary and alternative therapies, where there's virtually no serious side effects.
And you know, that's very true. There are a few, we do know that there are a few herbs and things out there that we're not supposed to take. But, you know, they're not also readily available, and they'll tell you you're not supposed to take these.
Yeah.
And but anybody, I encourage anybody, I don't care if you're going the natural way or if you're going to a traditional doctor, you owe it to yourself to do research before you ingest anything.
Well, the other part of it is that there are so many different ways to get help other than medicine that if a person has a chronic problem particularly, they really should look into it, because oftentimes chronic problems are helped partly by any one therapy, but not completely. So the complementary and alternative therapies offer a wonderful supplement or a complement to conventional medicine. I'm not here advocating that we shouldn't go to doctors. I'm saying that it should be an integrative endeavor where we all work together. I've also put a second chapter into the book looking at all these different complementary and alternative therapies. Acupuncture and homeopathy have wonderful ways of helping. When I was in training in psychiatry and in medicine, people told me that if a person wasn't motivated to get better, well, tell them to go home and come back when they are motivated.
That's true.
Homeopathy has medications that help people who lack motivation. In homeopathy, a lack of motivation is just another symptom. Acupuncture can help people when they've had strokes in ways that conventional medicine doesn't even know about. People who get acupuncture who just had a stroke can get out of the hospital in half the time on the average compared to people who don't have acupuncture. So in many ways, conventional medicine is, as I see it, practicing very poorly because they're not aware of many things that people can do to help themselves.
Well, let me ask you a question, Dr. Bernard. As we're sitting here talking about the, you know, the rise of what we call conventional medicine now. Of course, it used to be unconventional. Now it's conventional medicine. Through the rise of that, how did it become more empowering than homeopathy, you know, natural energy healings, natural herbs, things like that? How did it get so upside down? How did it get to be a... really, they're like two, they're two sides of the same coin, but they're butting heads. And I think that most people that are in the natural parts of the medicine to assist, like you said, with acupuncture, with any kind of energy healing, with any kind of homeopathy, whatever, you know, they're not here saying that conventional medicine, because there's never been one person I've ever personally spoken to that said that conventional medicine has no place, because it does. But the thing that I hear from conventional medicines is there's no place for anything natural or things that can't be prescribed or aren't chemical or whatever. How did it get to be that way?
It has to do with money, power, and politics. The conventional doctors, today's conventional medical doctors, around the beginning of the 19th century, very cleverly lobbied the government to legislate laws that they should be in charge of what is the right treatment for people. And they succeeded in getting legislation passed in all of the states eventually, so that they became the dominant healthcare providers. Now that they are entrenched, and they've been there for more than a century, we've come to view medicine, really, the word medicine, as representing allopathic medicine. But at the turn of the century, 100 years ago, when this started, homeopathy was actually as popular as allopathic medicine. Now, in Europe, where this didn't happen, homeopathy has continued to enjoy popularity and acceptance. I lived in England for about 10 years.
Oh, lucky you.
Yeah, it was lovely. And In England, they actually have homeopathic hospitals, and many doctors practice homeopathy along with conventional medicine. It's not an either or. But part of it is also our language, Rebecca. In Russian, for instance, there's the word da for yes and нет for no. But there's also a word, да нет. And that's one word that's yes and no together. We don't have that in the English language. We're used to thinking in terms of either or. It's either right or it's wrong. It's either, you know, medicine or it's not proper medicine, if it's not medicine, according to how we're used to thinking. So we've got to loosen up a little bit. And that's one of my motivations in writing this book, to bring the evidence for people who are interested to know, should I use or could I use any of these other therapies?
And, you know, I think that's really interesting. I did not know that, and I actually had a few guests on from England. We've talked about different, you know, healing aspects and some of the things that go on. I did not know they had homeopathic hospitals there. How wonderful is that?
I think it's really cool.
That's just awesome.
But at the same time, they're coming at it from the other end. They're excluding conventional medicine. And so I don't feel comfortable with that, because each has something to offer.
Oh, I
agree. Conventional medicine is wonderful where it comes to surgery and emergency care. It's marvelous where it offers hormones in safe ways. We're finding that there are certain side effects that can be dangerous with hormones, but now they're going into genetic changes that could be helpful. So there are wonderful things that conventional medicine has to offer. If I had diabetes and needed insulin, my goodness, where would I be if it wasn't for medicine?
Right.
But on the other side of it, it's not the only way.
That's true. I know that there are things that a person can do if they are diabetic. That could actually render them where they wouldn't have to be insulin dependent.
What I've found, my particular interest has been in spiritual healing, in Reiki, therapeutic touch, prayer healing. And many healers have noticed that when they get a good response in someone who's diabetic, they warn them to tell their doctor to carefully monitor their insulin, because they could go into insulin shock from taking the regular dose they've been taking after they've had the healing. They don't need as much once they've had the healing.
Yes, and I've actually run across that. You know, I'm also a Reiki master teacher myself, and I had quite an avid group of people that used to come to me a lot, and that was before I got out of it as an actual practitioner. And there was all kinds of changes. And one of the things, if you're going to be responsible about it, you do need to let people know that your body is going to be changing. It's going to be subtle. It's going to be different. And that they closely need to monitor whatever, any conditions that they may have. Whereas you have to be, you know, you have to have enough integrity to tell them. You need to speak with your doctor and let them know so that they can go in. They can be checked for different things, whatever, you know, in the case we're talking about a diabetic. But there's also people with hormonal issues or even other types of issues that, you know, sicknesses and maladies that they may have. Make sure that they do go back and check with their doctors so that they can be monitored. So that if the changes, that once they start happening, that they're being correctly treated on the other side of that.
Yes, that's the proper and ethical way to practice healing.
Yes.
I know, unfortunately, some healers who have gotten into the same mentality as the doctors, feeling that healing is the way to go rather than other ways. I'm uncomfortable with that as much as I'm uncomfortable with any other one way of doing it.
Well, you know, we're all individuals. Yes, our physical bodies are very similar. You know, we all need oxygen. We all need water. We all need foods. You know, there are certain things we all have pretty much the same types of organs. But other than that's where the similarities stop, because everyone's bodies vibrate, if you will, at a different level. Therefore, what I need, you wouldn't need. What works for me wouldn't work for you. That's why it's very, very important for people to understand that they must learn their own body so that they can tell their doctor, not let their doctor tell them, but they must tell their doctor, this is how I feel, this is what it happens when I do this. And because we are very different beings, we don't all require the same thing. What works on one won't work for another.
This is really hard for conventional medicine to digest.
Oh, I'm telling you, I've had so many arguments with doctors. Like, well, no, I'm telling you, it doesn't work for me, okay?
I was trained in medical school that I had to make a diagnosis. And I was told that the diagnosis is how we give the treatment. So we're really treating diagnoses. We're not treating people.
That's true. That's a true statement. Sad, but true. So you're treating symptoms, you're not treating what really is the cause of those symptoms. Although I will tell you, there is some hope. I have run across here recently some regular medical doctors that really get it. They talk about doing some natural things. And so there are some doctors that are incorporating that, regular medical doctors, osteopathic doctors, that are incorporating some of the natural or more natural ways of being part of the caregiving for the patient. They're actually listening to them instead of trying to treat a symptom. They're trying to find the cause of what is really going on with the individual.
And
it's not widespread enough yet, but
yes, that's the proper practice of medicine.
It is for any doctor. I don't care what line of doctoring you are in, whether you're a psychiatrist or a medical doctor or, you know, it doesn't matter. But I agree with that. I mean, you know, I think we need to, I think as a nation, as humanity, we need to understand that there are benefits to both sides of that.
Absolutely.
And if we get to that point, wouldn't that be just a marvelous day in the neighborhood?
I'm hoping that we're moving in that direction. And it's really the public that's leading us. One of my favorite cartoons is a patient who's at the receptionist's desk, and the patient is asking, does the doctor hug? It's the patients who are leading this shift and this change, voting with their dollars and voting by going to other practitioners.
That's true.
The medical doctors.
That's true. I love that. Does the doctor hug? If you know what, I'm going to tell you, we so miss the human touch anymore in our society, so that would be a great thing. I think the next time I go into a new doctor, I'll do that, Dr. Benor. And you know what, we're just about out of time in this segment, but we're going to come back. We're going to talk more about how I can heal what hurts with Dr. Benor and more of Journeys with Rebecca. Please don't miss a thing. We'll be right back.
Want to know what's on my coffee table? The latest issue of Fate Magazine. Hi, this is Rebecca. You know, Fate Magazine provides a one-of-a-kind reading experience. Published continuously since 1948, Fate is the only publication to consistently supply its loyal readership with a broad array of true accounts of the strange and unknown, from psychics and spiritualists to archaeological hotspots and fringe science. From authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations to readers' personal mystic experiences, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Fate's unique mix serves the growing audience of people seeking both answers and entertainment. Find out more about Fate, and to subscribe, log on to www.fatemag.com or call 1-800-728-2730.
Email Rebecca with your comments to mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Welcome back, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca. We are here with Dr. Benor. How can I heal what hurts? And, you know, I think we had quite a bit of information that we shared in the very beginning segment here, Dr. Benor. But, you know, we want to get back to your book, How Can I Heal What Hurts? And I think we kind of left off on chapter 2, and you were talking about in the next chapters, 3 and 4, are about some energy healing. And I think I'm going to turn this over to you for a minute, and let's go into that aspect of energy healing.
Well, when I was just starting to hear about holistic medicine and healing, being trained in medicine and psychiatry and research and psychology, I thought all this was really nonsense. I thought it was wishful thinking. I thought it was denial of serious illness, maybe even denial of death, that people would imagine that they could wave their hands over someone and make them better, or pray over them and make them better. That sounded the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard. And it was in, you know, terms of the training that I'd had in medical school. But as I observed healers and as I saw people changing, as I developed my own healing gifts and started integrating them in my practice of psychotherapy, I came to understand that there's much more to people than their physical body. Then, as I was very skeptical, I looked to see if I could find any research to prove beyond any doubt that healing works. And I was very pleased to find 191 controlled studies, scientific studies of healing, over a period of some 20 years. And I published that as my first book, which is Healing Research Volume 1. But the doctors kept asking me, you know, even though I showed them the book, I showed them the evidence, they said, how could I use something for which there's no theory to explain it? So I went back to the drawing boards and had a good think and realized that there is a perfectly good explanation that comes from Einstein. Albert Einstein said that matter and energy are two sides of the same thing. Now, quantum physics has very well confirmed Einstein's theory. And most of us have come to understand that, say, the chair that we're sitting on can be seen by a physicist as a bunch of particles and a bunch of energies rather than something solid. And that's because the physicist is looking at it in a different way. The same thing can be said of the human body. The body is either matter, which conventional medicine knows about, or energy, which healers know about. So I put together a lot of research around the issues of what could this energy be? How can it work? How can we understand it as a part of holistic healing?
Well, let's go back to the body again. We talked about energy healers. As an individual myself, I could, you know, I was laughing. I had to actually turn off my mic because I was laughing when you made the statement. Somebody, you know, putting their hands over somebody and heal them. You know, I just, it just, you know, made connotations in my mind about different old movies I'd seen, you know, and really how ridiculous it sounds and how actually unlike what it sounds that it is. You know, so it's kind of like a very ironic thing that we do. But I will tell you, I was just as big of a skeptic as anyone else until I experienced my first Reiki treatment. Something happened. It was on a very, very deep level. And people that go in and get massages, they go into, many people go into a very deep meditative state. And they kind of float, for lack of a better way of saying it. They float, and they're experiencing things internally within their body because of manipulations of the muscles and, you know, the tendons and all of that, and it helps to put things back into place. So massage, even though it's a very, contemporary thing that many people do, it's also an energy healing because when somebody's laying their hands on you, there's an exchange of energy there. So if the intent of the person who's doing a massage, say, is to make this person feel better, that's the energy that's coming from this individual that's exchanging with the individual on the table. So something as simple and as every day, a massage, so is like Reiki or anything else. It works on an energy level. It's not something we can see or touch normally, but we can certainly feel it. We can understand it from the internal side of self. But sometimes we have a hard time when we come back out of the space and we're in our day-to-day living of recognizing that subtle energy that flows within us and that we have the ability to manipulate that to make it work appropriately for our body, our skin, our spirit, and our soul that's housed within the physical self.
The interesting thing I found, Rebecca, agreeing with everything that you said, is that no matter how much I talk with people about it, if they're not familiar with it, they tend to look at me and listen to what I'm saying and sort of shrug and say, well, you know, that's what you believe, but... And I found that to get around that but, it's almost required that I teach experientially. So when I lecture, or better yet, when I get people into a workshop, we explore these energies with our hands. I've done this with doctors, where they would hold their hands near each other and then move them apart and back together and get a sense of the energies between their hands. And after a little while, when they started to really notice, you know, yeah, it is there, and others, you know, in the group would say the same thing, but they were feeling something else. Some would feel heat, some would feel tingling, some would feel pressure. They were like little kids in a toy store.
Yeah.
Just running around exploring, you know, what's it like when I put my hand up against yours? And so knowing it through the physical sensation of the healing energy, of the energies around and within the body that we all have and that we all can experience, that takes it to a different level of understanding.
And it's true. You know, I was listening to what you said. When I teach my Reiki, that's one of the first things that we do. We sit down and we do that experiment, especially for people who have never done anything like that before. We put the hands together, and, you know, it's the auras that people have, the push-pull sensation, the tingling, the warmth, whatever, the electrical feeling. And then, you know, we start using objects around the house. I'll have people touch plants that are in my house, or a vase, or the cat, or the dog, or whatever. And they can start, it's like getting them, it's like a whole new world. It's like, see, it really is there.
Another way is to look at different trees that way. People are amazed that different trees have different energies.
Oh, absolutely. That's really a good thing to do.
But you know, Rebecca, having spent some 20 years exploring energy healing, I was forced back into practicing psychiatry to make a living because of financial circumstances. It's hard to make a living just writing about healing.
Oh, yeah, so, I can imagine.
Yeah. Well, I found that it's actually more fun to be talking about it, and that's why I'm turning to doing more lectures and more radio work and more workshops. But having worked so many years with energy healing, where the healer is the one who's seen by the healee as the one who's doing the work, I became uncomfortable with it. And I started looking for ways that people could help themselves, and was very pleased to find that there are many, many ways for self-healing that can use energies, that can use spiritual awareness, that can use meditation and imagery, different ways of getting in touch with our holistic self, with our body, our emotions, mind, relationships, and spirit. One of the things that I've enjoyed the most is developing a form of self-healing that I call WHEE, W-H-E-E. Bet you've never heard of that one before.
No, I'm waiting for you to tell me what it stands for.
So WHEE is short for holistic with a W, hybrid, derived from EMDR and emotional freedom technique. Those are two techniques for dealing with severe stress. And what I found is by combining them, a person can do a self-hug. We call it a butterfly hug, where they cross their arms and put their hands one on each arm and alternate giving themselves a pat on each arm while they say an affirmation. This is a way to reprogram the brain, the right and the left brain, so that we can let go of old hurts. And once we've let go, we can program in what we want to have in our hard drive, in our biocomputer, so that we've replaced the negative with a positive. And I really enjoy teaching people because it's like teaching them the fish instead of giving them a fish.
Right. They have a lifelong skill as opposed to just eating in one meal.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So what I find is that when people have something that distresses them, and it could be a physical pain, or it could be a stress or an old emotional hurt, I can teach them within just a few minutes to let go of that hurt. Most people have carried these hurts for years and years, sometimes most of their lives. They're really, really surprised that it's possible to let go of this stuff. And so chapter 5 of my book presents we and other self-healing techniques for people who want to work on their problems themselves rather than have someone else do it for them.
Well, and I think that that's something that is very, very important, is for people to realize that they do have the power within themselves. You know, our society is such that, you know, our doctors have become demigods, if you will, and what the doctor says is what you're supposed to do. Instead of you telling the doctor what you need or what you think your body needs, the doctor tells you what he needs, what it needs.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, as individuals, we need to take our own power back. Which is, you know, one of the things we talked about earlier. How did this happen? When it used to be that you used to work with things that were in conjunction, that were natural for the body to help heal itself.
Yes.
And then, you know, the doctors came in, the formulation, as you talked about over a century ago, that whole governing thing happened, and then now all of a sudden the people are not empowered to have knowledge of their own bodies anymore because they didn't go to school.
And because they haven't consulted the expert.
Right. And the experts can't hope to know what every individual on this earth plane is going to, you know, respond to.
And the truth of it is that each of us knows inside, through our unconscious mind, what it is that's going on with us. When we have something wrong, there's a part of us that just is aware what it is that's gone wrong and how we can fix it. So a part of the self-healing is to figure out, how do I get in touch with that wise part of myself that just knows what it is that I've done to get myself here and can help me figure out how to get better. We is a way of then taking that information and using it sort of like one brick at a time to build a new home, taking apart the old home in whatever parts we're not happy with, and building a new one to live in.
Kind of like remodeling, eh?
Yeah. And you know, when you say that as a healer, you know, we give energy, I believe that that's so important because people get stuck. And Reiki and therapeutic touch and other ways of energy healing can get us unstuck. And then we're free to move in different ways within ourselves, within our minds, within our emotions, within our relationships. So the energies come along and they unblock the blocks and they give us extra energy if we need it, or they help us release, you know, excess energy if we have too much, to rebalance where we are. And then we can move on in a way that's much more healthy.
Well, and I think people really need to understand, we live in such a society that's so stressful. That's just like, you know, the new catchphrase. You know, everything is stressful. Everything is stressful. It doesn't matter what you do. I've had a stressful day. That stresses me out. You hear that a lot. And, you know, we really need to be able to take charge of ourselves, and we need to reconfigure some of the speech patterns, too, that we're using. And we need to become more attuned with who we are as individuals, so that we're better able to handle the day-to-day, very active lives that we all lead. Doesn't mean necessarily that, you know, stressful doesn't necessarily mean a negative, but most everyone takes it as a negative. So we can find some ways of decreasing that stress level on a day-to-day basis, and we're more balanced internally, we're much better able to have a better day. We're happier, we're well-adjusted. The stress doesn't seem to affect us as bad, because stress does and can cause physical ailments within the self.
A lot of times the physical ailments coming from the other direction give us clues to what it is that's gone wrong emotionally or through stress in the first place. People who have belly aches oftentimes have been belly aching, not doing something about it. Or they've been swallowing down whatever it is that they are feeling, and then it gets, you know, stuck in their gut somewhere, and they get their guts in an uproar. Or people who have backaches or neck aches oftentimes have gotten their back up over something, or something's been a pain in the neck in their life. So many times the body gives us clues what it is that we need to do to start being detectives. Because the body is sort of like the tip of an iceberg, and 9/10 of what it is, you know, below the surface of an iceberg is, you know, what our unconscious is like.
That's a good analogy. I like that. Even though we can't see what's underneath that iceberg, there's something going on.
And we know it's there.
Yeah, we do. We know it's there. Absolutely. Well, that's a very good analogy. I like that, Dr. Benor.
Well, another way, Rebecca, that I like to work with people is with dreams.
Ah, there's the key.
Because dreams are like little icebergs, you know, that float through our mind during the night. And we wake up in the morning and we barely have a sense, a memory of the tip of the iceberg. I mean, the tip of the tip of the iceberg.
Right.
But if we just stay still, if we grab hold of that little tip, pretty soon we get good at connecting with the rest of the iceberg. And that's a wonderful, wonderful way to understand what's going on inside ourselves.
And, you know, I can add to that, because literally last night I had a dream, and I remembered it because it was one of those that was when just before I woke up to get up for the day this morning. And I had a dream I was being strangled. I mean, I wasn't in any pain in my dream, don't get me wrong. But there was a sensation that I was caught in like seaweed or some kind of viney material that was crawling all over. And it was trying to strangle me, keeping me from communicating, keeping me held back. So when I got up this morning, I sat on the edge of my bed and I thought about this and I thought about it. And I know exactly where it's coming from. I know exactly what I need to do. You know, it's just a matter of getting the opportunity. But what people don't realize is that the dreams are absolutely, positively a huge insight as to what actions you can take. You just need to think about it. Most people would think, well, that sounds like a nightmare. Well, no, it wasn't. It was an indication that there's some things that I need to take care of. And I feel like I'm being strangled in the situation I'm in. I can't communicate because of the things that are going on, because all these vines and things were all around me. So now that I recognize that, now I can look at it from a different perspective and say, how do I get around these vines? How can I communicate? How can I get rid of the strangulation? It wasn't a negative. It was a huge positive for me.
That many people look at dreams as just sort of, you know, TV shows. That
yeah, your mind wandering, yeah.
As chewing gum for the mind, but the dream is a really deep clue. It's sort of like your cell phone ringing, only visually, and it's telling you, hey, pay attention here. There's something going on that I, your unconscious, would like you to understand and to look at.
Absolutely. Hang on, Dr. Bernard, we'll be right back.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
All right, and we're back with more of Journeys with Rebecca and Dr. Benor. You know, gosh, we've just chatted here. I'm just having too much fun. I don't know about you. But I'd like to talk a little bit more about the we. W-H-E-E, because I think that's going to be really good. And, of course, before we leave here tonight, we're going to let everyone know how to get a hold of you, how to get a hold of your websites, how to get a hold of your book, and maybe any other, if you have any events that you're going to be at, things like that, we'll let everybody know. So I'll make sure that we give enough time before the end of the show to give that information out, Dr. Bernor.
Great, because I actually do telephone workshops, so people anywhere in the world can join me to learn about we and some of the other things that I'm doing. Now, we is an amazing tool because it helps us shift worry into concern. Have you ever thought about that, Rebecca?
Well,
the difference between worry and concern?
You know what? I personally have, because I understand the difference between worry and concern, and they are on two different playing fields, and what they do to a person is very different indeed, worry and concern. But I'll let you talk about it.
Well, when people come to me and they're in a dither over what their problem is, many times they're dithering, but they're not dealing with their problem. So it's like, oh my God, I can't handle this anymore. Or I've been depressed for so long, I don't think I'm ever going to get out of this. So they're sort of spinning their wheels, thinking about what's wrong with them, rather than dealing with what's wrong with them. Concern is sort of like Mr. Spock in Star Trek. It's the logical part of ourselves, or in transactional analysis, people talk about the adult part that looks at the facts, looks at the problems, looks at how we can deal with them, and gets on with dealing with them the best we can. But then we have the child part, or the parent part, if we're looking at transactional analysis, and they can either get us in a panic or say, I should be doing this or I should be doing that. And if we can stop shoulding on ourselves, we can then let go of spinning the wheels and really deal with what the issues are. But many people find it hard because they've been doing this for so long. They've been fretting and worrying for so long, they don't even realize when they're doing it.
And they're really creating more of a problem.
Yes.
Right.
I call this a meta problem because it's one level removed from the real problem. But if we use we on the meta problem, then pretty soon that melts away. So people aren't in a panic. They're not stuck in the vicious circle of something's wrong, and oh my goodness, it's wrong, and they get worried, and then they do more things that get them in trouble. What's the opposite of a vicious circle, Rebecca?
Now that's a good question. Is an even line? I'm not sure.
We don't have the words for it in the English language again.
There you go.
I call it a sweetening spiral.
Ah, I like that term.
If we do something that we feel better about, then we're more likely to have energy to do something more and feel better yet, and then we do something more and we feel better yet. So it's the opposite of a vicious circle where we're digging ourselves a hole. This way we're climbing a spiral into nicer spaces. And I like the image because it feels to me that spiritual awareness is really important. So a lot of what I teach is how to bring the spiritual into our lives in order to make our lives better, and in order to help us both understand our situation and to deal with it.
Well, I like the spiral too, because it does allow us to look upwards. And when you think about a spiral up, you're looking upwards, you're not looking down anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good, and I like that. I like that visual. That's a very good visual.
I'm a visual person. My ears don't connect well to my hard drive. So I have to see a thing in order to really remember it. So that's why I like to use these images.
Photographic vision, right?
Yeah.
That's the way I am. I actually, when somebody talks to me, I actually see what they say as opposed to hear what they're saying.
Interesting.
Yeah. I've been like that all my life. I couldn't figure out what was, you know, quote unquote, wrong with me, because I couldn't figure out why no one could understand me, because I also have a tendency to talk how I see things. Yeah.
Well, the nice thing these days is that we're allowed to be ourselves.
Yes.
So I actually revel and enjoy hearing the differences between people. When I went into psychiatry, I couldn't believe that I would be getting paid for something so absolutely fascinating. And I've never looked back. I've always enjoyed being with people and talking with people and figuring out with people what they can do to make things better.
Yeah, to help themselves, yes.
Yeah.
That's very noble, by the way. And before we go too much further, I kind of want to give you some time to talk about your websites. You have several of them, and your email address. But I want to preface all this by saying that if people don't have a pen and paper, don't worry about it, because you're going to be up on my website. That's journeyswithrebecca.com, and they can just click on the links to your web pages because they will be up there. And also they can click onto an email link. So if they want to write you about this show, that they can. So why don't you go ahead and give people a little bit of information about those websites, those addresses, and how they can get your books.
Thank you very much, Rebecca, for the intro. My books are available through the Holistic, Holistic, healingresearch.com site. You can also sign up for workshops for WE and other workshops I'm doing around the country. But the workshops for WE are over the telephone as well, so people anywhere can join. There's also the International Journal of Healing and Caring online. I tell people that that's for user support and updates for my presentations, because I write articles and I have lots and lots of resources there that people can explore for helping themselves. There's one other resource, and that's the Council for Healing. We didn't talk about that.
No, we didn't.
We didn't really have the time here, but this is a group of representatives of different healing organizations who have come together to explore how can we help people to understand healing better, because we each know a little piece of the picture. So people who studied Reiki know something about, you know, one way of doing it. People who know therapeutic touch do it a different way. And we've all come together from different backgrounds to explore how can we understand healing from as many different perspectives as possible. I'm really excited because I've left my practice of psychiatry now, my salaried practice. I still have a bit of a private practice, but I'm exploring much more how to teach people some of the delightful things that I've learned for self-healing that are detailed in my book, How Can I Heal What Hurts? And how I can help people really to discover ways to help themselves. What I teach is not the answers, but how to ask better questions.
Excellent. That's excellent, how to ask better questions. Dr. Benor, I have to tell you, I'm absolutely fascinated by all the good work that you're doing. I wish we had two or three more hours to spend with each other. I truly do. And I'll just remind everyone that your website address, your email address is up on my website. Please don't hesitate to contact Dr. Benor. And again, thank you so much for being a guest here on the show. I was so enjoyed it.
I did too, Rebecca. You're a good interviewer. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank my guests tonight for sharing their wonderful information and knowledge with us. And a special thanks goes out to you, the listeners. Now, you know, the guests I have on air are given the opportunity to share their viewpoints or ideas. Now, you and I have the opportunity of choice in regards to those ideas or viewpoints. Be sure to check in next week for more enlightening educational talk and discoveries. This is Rebecca of Journeys with Rebecca. Until we meet again, where will your life's journey take you? Many blessings and good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.